Hello, this is Scott Wells for the Magic Word Podcast. And today my guest is Mr. Roy Zaltzman, all the way from Israel. Hello, Roy.
Hello.
Glad that you are here, and thanks for coming along on this tour across the U.S. You are just passing through Houston now. You've already, I guess you arrived in Texas straight from Israel?
Yes.
And then you got here when? Was that just last?
A few days ago, already been in Fort Worth and Dallas, and then I drove myself all the way to Texas, to Dallas, to Houston.
Now, what's it like in driving around over here? I mean, you're going to be, when you drive, you know, across the, in Israel, I mean, what's the driving like there versus here?
Not too different, even though the roads feel a little bit different, the exits feel a little bit different. Even that I'm driving with a GPS, I made some mistakes.
Yeah.
Here you have exit to the left. In Israel, you don't have it. You don't have left exits.
So you were saying, like in India, that was where it was just crazy drivers, I guess.
India is where I've been last month for shows. And driving there is, I would not drive there. With rickshaw, cab drivers, trucks, bicycles, children, monkeys, cows, everything is on the street, and I don't know how they survive.
You said, like, you go 10 kilometers and it takes an hour.
Or more and much hour, yes.
Wow, that's just crazy. So anyhow, you're going to be over here for the States for a little while, and of course lecturing over, you're going to be at the Daytona Magic Festival, and then finishing up later in Las Vegas for the Mindvention. And you had sponsored your own conventions a few years ago, which was the Mars, that's Magic on the Reds, at the Red Sea?
Magic at the Red Sea.
And
that took place in my hometown, Elat, which is the southmost point in Israel, which is a really, really cool tourist resort. So people who came to this convention enjoyed the weather, enjoyed a lot of attractions, everything.
Yeah. And that was how many years did you held that?
I did it in 2005, 6, and 7. Mm-hmm. And 2008 I did another convention next to Jerusalem. And then I did only a few private seminars, really
intense
2-day boot camp thing. I did it with Martin Taylor about hypnosis, which was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And Gregory Wilson did also a 2-day seminar. Very good. They really enjoyed that.
And name some of the people that you had at Mars at your convention back when you had them.
Well, Max Maven, Flip, Tony Brook, whom else? Aaron Fisher, Joshua J., Gregor Wilson, Tom Peterson, Pavel, and Ian Rowland brought to Jerusalem, as well as James Brown from England.
Now, you're most well-known as a mentalist. There are some people who listen to the podcast who may not know you because they may be more magicians and more into that rather than into mentalism, but you're not all about just mentalism because you have very good credentials as a card magician, too.
I've been doing close-up for many years, even though today I will not perform close-up initially, and if I'm invited to do like a cocktail party or so, I will do some mentalism, some close-up, you know, just to, you know, whatever I feel is right for this event. But what I do mostly is stage shows today, doing mentalism.
And so when you're traveling, like you said, over to India and other places, when you're performing for corporations, are you doing like a 1 hour, an hour and a half, 40 minutes? Or what typically are you performing a mentalism show?
Whatever they tell me.
Okay, yeah.
I ask them how much time do they need, what the messages they want to convey, and I just build it into the show. I like to make it customary.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you about disclaimers. This is something that mentalists often will talk about, of saying, you know, that they don't have these powers necessarily, and before they begin, and others just don't say anything and just kind of let the chips fall as they may, and so that way the audience can believe whether the person is a psychic or not. Do you have any thoughts or feelings on that?
Well, I think the best way to for that is have your own style. My style is saying that what I do is real. I'm God, and they should worship me. So they do, and that's fun. You know, they give me all kind of presents,
and Roy Zaltzman
flowers at my feet. Yeah, especially in India. In India, I mean, I sell spirituality for Indian people. It's how low can you go?
Exactly. In different cultures, I could see where they could start a whole religion, you know, after that.
I should do that sometime. But basically, what I do is, somewhere throughout in the show, I say, so you probably noticed that what I'm using is my intuition, my ability to communicate with you, as well as psychology, bad language, creative thinking techniques, memory, persuasion and influence. You know, this is the thing that we'll talk about. I think to have a disclaimer at the beginning of the show, it's like going to an alien movie, really good one,
yeah.
And there is a beginning, you know, I notice there are no aliens, no extraterrestrials. Everything you see here is only, you know, special effects and screen magic. And that's ruining it, you know.
Yeah.
You do not go to such a movie. I think if I still compare it to movies, a strong movie is a movie that makes you think, what if?
Mm-hmm.
After, I believe, many people saw the first Matrix, they probably had this little bit of an anxiety way of thinking, what if reality is not reality?
Mm-hmm.
Or they saw Titanic, what if I wasn't that Titanic at the same time? So it's really good to shake a little bit people's world and perception with the show, so it will be more than entertained. It will resonate afterwards in their mind for a little bit. And that's and then a lot, whatever, don't tell them to believe in anything, but I think it should, you know, it should bother them a little bit, so they can think about it, talk about it with their friends. What do you think? Do you think it's real or not? Let people, you know, talk about it. Let them take it
home. Let them make up their own decision what it is. They came there to be entertained. You don't want to, again, start off by saying, this is strictly entertainment and that I'm going to try and fool you. Because you're setting up an adversarial kind of a situation then, too.
If my job is to be kind of a witch doctor and heal them, that's one thing. But if my job is to entertain them, especially in corporate events, or, I don't know, a ticketed show, they pay tickets to come to see a show.
Sure.
Well, what should you tell them? Well, the show is fake? I don't know, they pay a ticket to forget reality, to forget the problems, 1 hour, and see a show. So do whatever. And disclaimers is something which is overspoken in such a way you can't even understand. I don't know. People want to be entertained, entertain them. That's it. Point.
Right.
That's it. Regardless what you do.
Why did you decide to entertain them with mentalism as opposed to magic? I mean, it seems like, and I'm asking you specifically as an Israeli, because it seems like that you can't swing a steel mask without hitting a mentalist over there. I mean, they're more popular there than they are here.
Well, count the entire good Israeli mentalists and you get maybe a dozen. It's not that many, but it's that many for such a small country.
But for a small country,
I mean, in India, I met only a few, less than 10, like 5 or so.
Whole country,
Yeah, so... So you have more, and of course, audience in Israel is really sophisticated audience, so the mentalist has to be really sophisticated. Therefore, Israeli mentalists, you know, can perform anywhere in the world, and it works pretty well.
But it's a lot of talking, you know, and that's, I mean, mentalism as opposed to magic or illusions that you can do silently to, you know, manipulating billiard balls or having an illusion done with music and dancers and everything, whereas mentalism is more of the mind, and I would think that you are kind of limited to some markets, particularly worldwide, and you do travel all over the world, where that English may not be their first language, and they're having to interpret that, and there are some subtle nuances in the English language, particularly with mentalism, where you're doing those, you know, false realizations, you know, that someone thinks you're saying one thing, but you're actually saying something else to the audience, you know, dual realities, you know, type of a thing. So how do you address that?
Well, I would not use any serious dual reality in a non-English speaking country.
Mm-hmm.
I did perform in Italy and had someone to interpret my show, and I did a video production talking to myself in Italian.
Uh-huh.
I don't speak the language. I actually learned the text and I put it on my computer as a teleprompter as I was talking, you know, preparing the video, and that went really well.
Wow.
Also in India, I can speak a few words in Hindi, count in Hindi, and I use it in my show.
Mm-hmm.
So anywhere I would go, I'll add a little bit of their own native language.
Mm-hmm.
So they feel more as if I'm, you know, trying my best, as if I'm a part of them. And it's a little bit, just, you know, so...
Yes.
So that what I would use, I think, yes, mentalism is a talking thing. Not always. You can watch Aaron Crow, he doesn't speak, and he does mentalist effects.
Mm.
But...
Yeah, Aaron Crow does like the Russian roulette kind of thing, right?
He does many things.
And
it's more of a bizarre stage thing. But what I mean is, yes, mentalism is more talking. If you do a cabaret show, a dub production act, it's something else. And therefore, each one of the fields of magic has its advantages and disadvantages. I mean... A dub act has to prepare at least 20, 30 minutes before the show.
Right.
I just stand on stage and say good evening, and that's it. I'm prepared.
Yeah.
Basically.
That's like a Max Maven's DVD on nothing. You kind of come prepared with your mind, and you really don't need to have a lot. That's the advantage of being a mentalist. It's like with a stand-up comic who is going to be able just to entertain with nothing more than a microphone and stand there naked before the audience, that you could almost do that as a mentalist. Are there some things that you do that are that you would do in every show that's kind of like your go-to type of mentalism effect? What would that be?
Well, because I can put every mental effect into one out of eight possible effects,
mm-hmm.
only possible eight possible effects, I would do things which are varied, okay, more variety. So there will not be only predictions. So one thing would be a prediction, one thing would be mind reading, one thing will be telekinesis, one thing will be influence. But we'll use different perceptual effects. That's what drives me. So people feel as if my show is interesting. Every time, you know, different things happen.
Mm-hmm.
Even with close-up magic, many people do take a cartridge and find it in different ways. But basically, for the mind of people, it's the same effect.
Mm-hmm.
So this is one of the things I'm thinking of. And
well, that's what I was kind of ultimately getting to. Is it seems like that a lot of mentalism, it has to do with predictions. You know, how do you keep a show from looking like, okay, I have this prediction over here, or I knew you were going to say that, and to prove that, I have this prediction, or in my pocket is something that you were just thinking of. You know, so it is a series of predictions, and how do you go about making sure that the whole show doesn't seem like it's just the same trick repackaged over and over? I think you kind of answered that when you said you do telekinesis and you do other types of things, influence.
Yeah, if I do a memory effect,
yeah,
which is I call it the virtuos effect. I can show
virtuos,
as if I have a mind abilities, quick calculation,
okay,
or good memory.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be an effect.
Sure. Okay.
If I show a magic
like
square,
magic
that would
square,
be
yes.
Yeah, would be one. If I show memory, I can memorize 20 objects, which the audience just said,
mm-hmm.
numbered 1 to 20. That's a memory demonstration. It doesn't feel like any of the above.
Right, that's a good point.
Also, body magic. Body magic is underused.
Body magic?
Body magic, yes. If I'll, I do the four-man heavy lift every show.
Oh.
Where
they kind of lean over into each other's laps like that and take the chairs out?
No, this one, no. When a heavy person sits on a chair and me and three other guys put our fingers underneath his kneecaps and under his armpits and we try to lift him up with the fingers only, we can't. And then I do something with them, like a concentration thing. And the second time we do that, we lift him up like a feather. Now, that's an old thing. Uri Geller did it in the 70s all mm-hmm. the time. And that's something I do every show, and I milk it, and it's really cool to have people remember and ask me. And I kind of try it at home. It works.
Is it something in which that you present, though, as a hypnotic type of effect, as if you're putting someone into a trance or saying, okay, I want you to concentrate just on this, or how do you... Without using your presentation.
No. I actually present it as an energy shift, which we can't do it, but if we're going to change the energy, and we're going to change the energy with your perception change, because I'm going to let you a few things to think about, imagine vividly,
mm-hmm.
and they do something in their minds, I instruct them,
mm-hmm.
like a very, very short, guided imagination kind of a thing,
mm-hmm.
and then they succeed. So it's, once again, it adds another flavor to the show.
Mm-hmm.
Completely different flavor.
Hmm.
Metal bending is something visual. There are many visual things can be done. Breaking glass and that will take away definitely from, I knew you were going to say Queen of Hearts.
Yeah.
Yes.
That type of a prediction thing. Well, going back to Uri Geller, I was going to eventually get to him as well, because, again, some people listening may not know that you were involved with the first show that started with what we call over here in the U.S. the Next Phenomenon, that had Uri Geller and Chris Angel involved as the judges of that. Talk a little bit about that show and the evolution and how you got involved in Uri and all that.
Okay. In 2006, the show was in Israel. We were 9 participants. I was one of them. They really didn't want to know that we are also magicians. That was a really cool thing. The only problem is that I was producing Mars at the same time.
Oh.
When they figured out that I'm doing that, 2 weeks before the show, they freaked out.
Hmm.
Freaked out. I kind of shook the system.
Almost took you off the show?
It took me off the show.
Oh, they did?
Yeah,
oh.
I was the first one off the show just because of that. Trust me, I know that.
Wow.
Yeah. And it was fun anyway. Mm-hmm. It was really fun, and it was the first ever Next Uri Geller show in the world. It's an mm-hmm. Israeli production. It was made by Elad Kuperman. Okay, this is the producer.
Okay.
And then the show was sold to the United States and became phenomenon, and they added Chris Angel. Very, right. Very weird decision, but it was okay.
Popular magician of the time.
I know.
Yeah.
But it was like not the same, didn't feel the same.
No.
It's like we had in Israel Who Can Fool the Master, which was a take for Penn and Teller Fool Us. So they brought
right.
Max Maven as the master,
mm-hmm.
and that completely didn't feel the same.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then also the Uri Geller show was sold to many other countries, mainly in Europe, Russia, Hungary, Germany, Holland, Turkey. And it went really well. In Germany they had 3 seasons, in Holland 2 or 3 seasons. And that was really good.
Pretty good. Sure. We only had one here.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Well,
the fun thing, by the way, was that Ehud Segel participated in both. He participated in the Israeli competition.
Who is that? Ehud Segel.
The Mentalizer. He participated. Yeah.
Okay.
It's really cool, actually. He participated in the Israeli one and mm-hmm. then the American one, because he had like he has a green card or citizenship.
Yeah, so he can work over here.
Yeah, so he did both.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't remember what he did here. The name doesn't ring a bell.
Well, the best thing to probably remember is the credit card that he did, you know, with a floating credit card around his body thing.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's a really good use for a $10 trick.
Okay.
And he does it very, very well.
Yeah.
Very well, yes.
Well enough to put him on television, I guess, then.
Yeah.
So, going back to that, how did you get on television then to begin with? Did they contact you
yeah.
then?
Okay. Yeah. I was at FISM in Sweden at that time, and I got 2 phone calls the same day. One was from my wife telling me she's pregnant.
Congratulations.
And then the second phone call was from the production of Uri Geller that they want me to participate in this show.
Wow.
Yeah,
it was a great day.
Great day, very good day.
Was it your Uri who had sent called you, or just the production company?
No, the production.
Okay, so you know Uri Geller and had met and worked with him. Have you gotten to be better friends or consulting? Or?
Nothing too special. I mean, he has his own things, he does. But I was in England one time, and Aaron Raven,
mm-hmm.
who participated in the American Uri Geller phenomenon, was there at the same time.
Sure.
And I was with another magician, Israeli magician, lives in London. So I just called Uri Geller mobile phone and said, "Hi, Uri, I'm here." And he said, "Oh, cool, do you want to come and visit?" "Yes, I'm here with Aaron Raven." "Cool, definitely, do come." So we're like a pack of a few magicians. One of us is a photographer. Come to his apartment. He has a really nice duplex
yeah.
at 100 Westminster Road. Really nice place.
Mm-hmm.
Best view of London. And he shows us like this really nice duplex, really cool. His wife making us coffee. We sit in the living room,
yeah.
we talk. And he said, "You know, I was renting this apartment for a long time, for like 5 years, to Kevin Spacey." I'm like, "Okay." He wanted to buy this duplex, but I say no. So we bought another one, you know, just a few doors away
yeah.
in this building. Yeah. So he was like giving us all the cool stuff.
That's interesting.
And he was really excited that we came to visit him. He,
yeah.
he took our picture and published it somewhere in the newspaper, like here, this mentalist visited me. It was really cool. He is a PR genius.
He is
a PR genius.
I see him as being a fairly likable and approachable kind of a guy, knowing that he may have another agenda in mind. I'm just thinking, like you say, PR-wise, he wants to continue to keep his name and face, you know, out there as well. So I think he likes to associate perhaps with some mentalists, but not necessarily with magicians, because I know that he doesn't like to be considered as a magician.
I think nowadays,
yeah,
when everything is behind him and he's probably more mature, he doesn't mind it. He participated in magic convention in Italy.
Well, and he was over here. Richard Kaufman had him at the Genie Convention.
There
that was
go.
The first time he'd ever been in the U.S. for a magic convention.
There you go. And, well, you know,
mm-hmm.
It's beyond him now. He doesn't have to prove anything.
That's true.
Yeah.
When I was talking with Banachek about when he went to visit Uri, he was taking him outside, and there was a tree or some bush or something that had a lot of bent spoons, and that people had bent, or he bent for them and whatnot. Did you see that? Did you go out there and I'm talking about?
I haven't been
yard?
To the mansion. I haven't
it's,
been to the
okay,
mansion.
Okay,
I've been only to one of his apartments.
It was flat down. Okay.
And that's probably where his money goes. It's
that
real estate, islands, whatever. He's
yeah, good investment. So he's
he
smart
did,
guy.
He did that. What he did when he earned money performing,
yeah.
he invested it in real estate. And
right.
Yeah.
Now, you've been doing mentalism for a long time, and you chose that path. Did you do because you do card magic? We talked about that briefly at the beginning. Why did you decide to kind of start moving over more into the mind reading?
Pays more.
And you carry less.
Yeah, I was born in Elat. It's a very touristic city, and I started performing in hotels when I was 15. I was doing kids shows. After my service in the army, everyone serves the army.
Everyone does obligated.
Every man does at least 3 years, and I was doing it in the Air Force. I was working on F-16 airplanes and Apache helicopters on several systems.
Mm-hmm. That's why you like going down to Space Center, because you kind of like seeing the flights.
It was part of what I did, and and after I finished with the Air Force, I opened, you know, seriously my performing business. I was performing in many hotels in Elat, at least 6 months a year, seven things a day, gigs.
Wow.
I was doing balloons, origami lessons, I taught magic, I did kids magic, and then I did illusions.
Mm-hmm.
Illusions, you know, people like the show. I didn't feel right. It didn't feel right to me. I'm definitely not an illusionist.
Mm-hmm.
So, at a certain point, all the entertainment theme changed in Elat when different hotels had their own entertainment team and entertainment manager, and then became a new era when there are external producers who give the entertainment or sell the entertainment to the hotel, the entire thing.
Yeah.
So now there is a middleman who wants to pay the artist less.
Okay.
So everybody like cried, the mayor, what do we do? So the next year I decided I'm going to move away from Elat. I had an aunt living in Ra'anana, is not too far from Tel Aviv, and she was like my beloved aunt who died out of cancer. Beforehand, I said if I'll ever move from Elat, that would be to Ra'anana, the city she was living on. So I was in Elat looking for apartments. I called to an apartment in Ra'anana, and the guy told me, you know, describes me the apartment.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as I hear what he has to say, I said, yeah, I think I'll take it. Where is it? And he told me the street, the very street she was living on. Mm-hmm. So I came to see the apartment. It's a one-way street.
Yeah.
His building is in front of her building. His flat is in front of her flat, window to window. That was a sign. So I moved there. That was me and my girlfriend at that time, and Manny Lindenfeld, if you know this guy. He's a very well-known Israeli mentalist.
Mm-hmm.
He has the Magic Studio 5051. He invented some of his gimmicks, you know, mm-hmm. in our living room, and he stayed with us for a while. So that was part of the thing. So anyway, I was doing birthdays for kids. I was performing in shopping malls and mm-hmm. all kind of things like that. And at the same time, I was doing more and more and more of mentalism, which I always liked. I mean, as a kid, I was reading books like Chariots, God Chariots, or something like by Eric von Däniken.
Yeah, and Chariots of the Gods.
Yeah, mm-hmm. it was really interesting for me. I was really always interested in the sci-fi and the bizarre. So I was doing mentalism, and then it became, I had like a crack in my soul. I felt it's wrong. It felt I could not handle it. That let's say somewhere in the afternoon, hey kids, hello, da 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 da, do a kids show, and later in the evening, good evening Microsoft, this is Voice of My. I felt, I don't know, kind of ain't work for me anymore. So mm-hmm. I took the Greek decision, which is to burn all the bridges behind me,
mm-hmm.
and then I will not be able to follow back. So what I did is I sold all my stuff for kids, all my illusions, everything, which I didn't want to perform. So if I get a phone call, please come and perform for my kid for $1 million, I cannot do that.
Can't do it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. that's it. So, and that was a very good decision, because only when I closed this door behind me, only then I could be really focused in the future. And that's what I do.
And your future was going to be just corporate and adults and business executives
yeah.
and mentalism.
Yeah, I do. If it's a private event, I would do like an adult birthday or bar mitzvah for the entire family.
Mm-hmm.
It's the bread and butter. But besides that, I would do the corporate events, mm-hmm. convention MC, trade shows,
mm-hmm.
and trainings. I have two trainings, one for memory enhancement, the other one for influence and persuasion.
How long are those training sessions? I say day long, half day long?
Any
whatever they want.
Any amount of time. Usually I advise it should be 3 hours and more.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a sidekick. I don't even push it too much, you know, just once in a while. So it's a good variety. It makes me, you know, when I train people, I train myself at the same time. You know, when I teach memory, then my memory
yeah.
is the strongest.
Well, Well, of course, they always say the teacher is the one who learns or knows the most, and they should, indeed, because the students are going to be asking questions. You need to be able to answer any question they kind of throw at you, so you need to bring in everything to bear. I feel like that's how I got to be a better magician, when I started actually teaching a class at a local junior college in magic, and I had to do a lot of research and some books and learn some things outside of my familiar zone, if you will, and that way that I feel like I became a better magician, because when they asked questions, I was able to answer them and to show them how to do those things too.
You had also to look at the things you already do from a different angle.
A different angle, exactly.
Exactly. And that's what teaches you most. Mm-hmm. I have a few students which are non-magicians. Like I have a business owner, a multi-million business owner, who comes to learn telepathy from me in teaching methods such as multiple selection, multiple out, mm-hmm. or one step ahead. Mm-hmm. And he takes it, you know, and apply to his sales methodologies. So that's very, very keen of him.
Yeah.
He comes to learn from a different field, something which he cannot learn in the traditional sales.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something I would advise every mentalist, add different fields to whatever you do. I learned holistic massage. I don't treat people, but it made me think a little bit different about my job.
Well, that goes just to the point of knowing more than just your central focus. And I don't care whatever career that you happen to have or interest that you happen to have, if it's golf or needlepoint or ceramics or whatever it might happen to be, or, you know, or as a hobby, you know, you need to be looking and reading and knowing more about what's happening in the world. Read the newspaper, watch the evening news, you know, talk with other people that are outside of whatever your interest is, so that way that you're a congenial person. I think that's who people, they like to know about our interests, but I think it's important also that you're able to get into their world and understand what's going on in the world and in politics and everything.
My advice, do not read the newspaper, do not watch the evening news. That will save you a lot of brain thing. You know, like, it's horrible. Because what you can read on the news usually, it's...
Well, bad news. It's not news, unless it's bad.
It's just...
But it's like sports. You know, I don't follow sports, but a lot of people obviously do, and they like to talk about that.
Do read books. Do read interesting things. You know, one of the books I read lately was 4 Hours Working Week by Timothy Ferris. A very, very good book. Mm-hmm. So, and it teaches you a lot. And also, you can listen to many online gurus teaching you all kind of sort of things about... I learned so many things that helped to my business.
We were talking about that this morning, about e-marketing and that kind of thing.
That's one thing. And that get me to do my unpublished magic tutorials project. Mm-hmm. And also I learned Photoshop from tutorials, and I'm pretty good with that. I learned website building. I mm-hmm. learned WordPress, so I build my own websites, you know, on a spare time basis. Now I even will not do that. I will give it to other people, and then I'll just correct what I need to correct. You know?
Mm-hmm.
But the more I know, you know, surrounding my business, it just, you know, helps.
Mm-hmm.
It helps.
Well, I want to ask you then also about that teaching. I'm sorry, what was it called again? The videos that they can subscribe to?
Unpublished magic tutorials.
Unpublished magic tutorials.
Yes.
How did that develop?
After I did Mars in Israel, in Elat, the convention, I had footage from various artists.
Mm-hmm.
So I contacted them and I asked their permission to release one of their effects. And
from their lecture at the convention.
So this footage was never published, or even mm-hmm. the trick was never published. And they gave me their permission, so I put it online on a webpage for them, with a few words about them, and even a website link to wherever they want to. Let's say mm-hmm. to their website, to their sales page. So people can, you know, see, get a sample of what they do, and maybe contact them later if they need anything. So it's not a selling thing, you know, it's just, it's our way to share knowledge and
from other magicians,
and my own, and also from Israeli mentalists and magicians. Mm-hmm. I actually for a while did videos when I kind of like crash other people home and force them to teach something. It was like a funny thing. Like I'm knocking someone door and he says, go away, no, please teach my friend something. That was like our take on the subject. And it's fun. It's pure fun. And the proof of that, because I have over 2,000 people registered for that. And, you know, from once in a while, I meet people and say, hey, we're getting your tutorials. Really cool. We like
right.
it. And I feel as if, you know, by these tutorials, I'm making friends all over the world, which I don't know, but I will meet them sometime.
Right. Yeah, it's more than just Facebook friends, who are those that you see whatever posting their cat they're putting out there or something. At least this is someone who's actually learning, because you know they're downloading that they have subscribed them to the tutorials. And those are short things, too. They're probably, you know, less than 5 or 10 minutes in length, with some really good ideas that are in there. Like, say, Gregory Wilson and others that have taught a lot of good ideas then, too. And so for those people who are interested and want to subscribe to that list, how do they reach you? What do they do?
www.telepathy.co.il. I-L-L, like Lama. Lama, Israel. I-L is Israel.
Israel, okay.
/unpublished.
Unpublished.
So it's www.telepathy.co.il/unpublished. So it's within my website for magicians, because telepathy.co.il is my website for magicians, with dates, where I'm lecturing, my products, what I do.
Yeah, if they want to find you, your website is telepathy.com.
Telepathy.co.il.
I-L or E-L?
I-L is the short for Israel.
Israel. Mm-hmm.
First and last letter.
Right. Just like in the UK, they've got .uk,
yeah.
.co.uk.
Yeah.
And so that's your main website. People want to contact you or find out more information about what you're going to be doing. And when you are lecturing, by the way, what would you say is one of the strong things that you perform? Or, you know,
in my lecture?
Yeah, in your lecture.
Well, two things. Three things. I show them first how I can work when it's a casual style,
mm-hmm.
because my style, even if I wear a suit and tie, it's still kind of a friendly, outgoing, casual style. And it's unlike many mentalists, which are transmitting arrogancy
mm-hmm.
and vanity. And that would be a, you know, a character for some of them.
Mm-hmm.
Max Maven, maybe, can do that. And he knows that, and he does it very well. And it really suits him, because he's kind of devilish.
Yes.
Do not be arrogant and vain. You can be happy, you can be friendly, you can be sad, you can be terrified from your own powers, you can whatever personality to put to that.
Sure.
So my style is casual and friendly, and try to be as likable as possible.
And not be really spooky and kind of bizarre.
No, it's I try to be human being.
You're not really creating a character, you're trying to be yourself. Would you say?
I don't know. There is probably a character. It's not exactly. It is me, but still not exactly. It can never be you, you know, on stage. Let's say I did shows in India. I was sick. I had fever. I had 100 degrees fever.
Wow.
And then I performed on stage. I didn't feel any pain, anything. I'd never do.
Mm-hmm.
So that was not me, right? Because after
yeah.
before and after the show, I was dead. So on stage, it was not exactly me. So, so likability is one thing. The second, in casuality, I'm really casual, outgoing, uninhibited,
mm-hmm.
maybe a little bit demented. But okay, that would be one. The second thing is I don't know. I can't remember what was the
thing.
Yeah, what was the question
about things that you feel like that are important in your lecture that you teach?
Oh, in my lecture, the second thing is no props. My props is I buy it in my special magic shop called Staples. Well, you all do, all mentalists do.
Office
but basically,
Mac, yeah.
I'm using pieces of paper or some pads and paper. And I try, but not that. I try to do things with body magic. So there's a chair, someone sitting on a chair, and that's it.
Yeah.
Or I'll do like a pseudo hypnosis, sometimes things. And by the way, hypnosis is another kind of effect. And
you say the process is another kind of effect? What'd you say?
Pseudo-hypnosis.
Pseudo-hypnosis is another type of effect? Yeah.
It's another.
Okay,
it can
sure.
be under influence.
Sure.
Under influence, but that would be one thing. So no special props unless you want to really do a show, and then you have a case, something hanged from the wall, you have a screen, you have this, you have that, and you want to do like a big stage show,
mm-hmm.
you know, to make it more flashy, then,
right.
then it's okay. But for most, even corporate shows for 100, 200 people, you know, in their auditorium, you know, my bag is enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just...
Then the third thing?
And the third thing, what I teach in my lectures is practical stuff, working stuff.
Commercial things commercial, that actually people want to see, not just for magicians.
It's actually the other way around. I apologize for now. If you're looking for me to show you a really cool secret which you didn't know how I did it, and I fooled you with that, and you'll never be able to do that ever again, well, I'm not the guy. Search someone else. I think you're familiar. Not me. I'm giving you my working material, my heart and soul. I actually talk about everything.
Yeah.
People ask me whatever they want in the lecture, and I give them sincere answers. Right. No holding back. That's my style.
Mm-hmm.
So in the lecture, I can give you real working material. And even if you're a hobbyist, even if you just show tricks for your friends,
mm-hmm.
you can do that. I also show some close-up things because I can look just close-up, and after the lecture, people sit with me, and I'll show some more and more and more. The more you want, the more yeah. I give, no problem. You see, I'm here in the United States. I came all the way from Israel. I have nowhere else to go, yeah. So...
Going to be here for a while.
Yeah.
That's right. And I know from year to year, you're traveling different places and traveling around the world, and so they're not often going to be able to catch you someplace, so.
Usually, places I go, I see if there's an opportunity maybe to lecture. Let's say after 3 weeks in the United States, I come to Israel for 3 days, and then I fly for Barcelona, which I perform at a big conference there.
Mm-hmm.
Means my wife and 3 kids are alone for 1 month. And they're small ones.
Yeah.
And I tried to contact a guy who organized lectures in Barcelona. Well, I could not make it this time because his calendar is already booked. But, sure. You know, it's always worth to try because it happened mm-hmm. to me in England. It happened to me in Belgium. I was invited to perform in university, in Leuven University in Belgium.
Yes.
And on the way where I was there, I did 2 lectures in 2 magic clubs.
That's
why
right.
not?
Sure.
It's meeting more magicians, making more friends.
Right.
And...
good opportunity to spread some ideas. And you've got mm-hmm. some good ideas then with billets and billet switches and things like that too.
Yeah. Billets is underused whatsoever. It's underused and...
Why do you say that?
Because not too many people, I believe, use it. And billets is anything. Any kind of paper which you can write on is a billet.
Yeah.
So either it's your business card or it's a piece of paper, 9x9, I don't know, 3x3, how do you call
right.
this thing. I just cut my own kind of paper, so it's small... billets and use it.
Well, 2x3 size, 2 inch by 3 inch or so, just small pieces of paper.
Just a piece of paper, and that's it. But it's not the issue. For me, it's just my need to get an information, which you can get many, many other ways.
Do you use center tears?
Yes, I have my own RZ center tear and my own
tape. RZ center tear.
RZ City. And it's actually different from the rest. Mm-hmm. And also I have a take on the one-hand Enneman switch.
Mm-hmm.
And I do it in such a way you can't see anything.
Oh, I remember you taught that at Mindvention last year. It's like, wait, show that again. That
yeah.
is very clever. Mm-hmm.
So, and I explain how I get to what I get. It's like if there is a math exam and I just give the answer, that's not an answer. I need to show you the way. So when I talk about the way, I talk shortly how I use creative thinking techniques in my process,
mm-hmm.
such as multiply or or division or... cross-breeding, unification, elimination, and even mind mapping to make what I do. So people can take the tools and use it for many other things just as well.
Right, right.
So that's my lecture is all about.
Sounds like there's a lot of stuff that's inside there. And you've got lecture notes, DVDs, different materials, or you have just a few things?
I have party tricks, souvenirs, handcuffs. No. What I have is I have 2 DVDs. One is the Roy DVD, which I did with my associate Roy Yuzevich, and that's a very, very detailed and good DVD. The other one is Requires Only You, an acronym for Roy. How
requires only you, R-O-Y.
How vain can you get? So, and it's mostly about billet work. And I have the Lottery Winner 2, which is a true winner. It's actually something I didn't even know how strong it is when I initially invented it. And I grew up with this effect. Because now with a small pack of business cards, I do big stage routines. And
yeah.
I have so many ideas and people giving me more ideas. And soon there will be a PDF available for the Lottery Winner 2 users. Beside that, I'm really fond of invisible elastic thread mm-hmm. and loops work. So I have my own... thread, which I sell 100 meters, 330 feet of it.
Wow.
And people who use it really like it, and they re-buy it over and over again. It means they like it, and it's strong and
right.
invisible.
Yeah.
And that's another tutorial how to work with that, how to make your own loops. Because I think, why buy this mechanic thing which costs $100 to tie on loops?
Tie
loops. You can tie a loop with your hands
for free.
For free.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And so by using the loops, yeah, we were talking last evening about Banachek's psychokinetic touches and that the other variations that have come after that, like using loops and things so that people would feel things like that. So there's so many different kinds of things that you can do with loops.
Yeah, you know, when you do invisible touches, there is the ultimate effect, which I did. It was in Mexico in a street bar.
Really? A strip bar?
A strip club. Yeah. I did it on someone's boob. That was good. Yeah, that was good. And she called all her friends, so they will feel that feel. So they were paying me afterwards. Yeah,
they were paying you.
That was over 10 years ago.
Yeah.
You can't see him blushing right now. It's really, Scott is blushing. Red blushing.
That's funny. Well, Roy, thanks very much. I'm glad that you were able to make it over here and share your knowledge with the American mentalists and magicians. And I hope that those who are going to be listening that are still going to be here for the rest of the tour, because you're not heading back until mid-November, I guess, back to Israel. And then coming back over here from time to time. As I said, you were here last year, I know, for a short time for the Mindvention. And so might be an opportunity for you to return.
Yeah, I hope that I will be able to do it at least once in the middle of next year or something.
Yeah.
Actually, after I published the fact that I'm here for a few lectures, I got more
interest on people who want
to open. People wanted to do it in next to New York, in Pennsylvania, which I could not make it this time.
Yes.
So hopefully I will be able to assemble it to a tour next time and share more knowledge.
Go up into the northeast of the U.S. Yeah, well, right now you're having the good experience of being able to travel around the car and get to see different parts of the country.
Driving in the country for me is exciting.
Yeah.
And also experiencing Halloween is tomorrow, and that will be my first Halloween in the United States, so that's fun. I'm going to knock on people's door and say trick or treat.
You're a scary guy, so you don't have to wear a mask.
Yeah, exactly. So,
Roy, the last thing I want to ask you, that the title of my podcast is called The Magic Word. So what would be the word that you would use? Is there something that is important to you? It's not necessarily something that you use on stage. It could be something that is a way of life. You know, you're something that has some meaning to you.
Oh, I have so many things. I would quote someone, okay, which I think it's really, really my way of life anyway.
Yeah.
His name is Brendon Burchard. He's one of the best internet marketing alive.
Mm-hmm.
And he wrote a book called The Life Golden Ticket. And in this book, he asked three questions, which is the thing that will lead him, you know, towards his goals. And the question is, did I live, did I love, and did I matter? And that's...
Did I live, did I love, did I matter?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's... I want to experience things. I want to meet people. I do this lecture tour now in the United States, mm-hmm. which is, as for money, it doesn't worth it. I could do better shows in Israel and earn more, but for me, the true earning is staying at your place, staying mm-hmm. at other people's place, meet magicians, hang out, share magic, and that's the fun. And this kind of fun you cannot buy. It's either you do or you don't.
Good point. Well put. Live, love, and matter. That's great. Well, that was Roy Zaltzman. And for the Magic Word Podcast, this is Scotty out.